Good afternoon, folks. My name's Craig, and this is the Over the Fence show here on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM and 89.0 Free FM throughout the Waikato. Beautiful day out there, folks. Hope you're enjoying it. And on the show today, we're going to rip through some a few primary sector headlines, then we'll have a look at the weather, go through some gardening to-dos, and then a bit later in the show, we're going to be joined by Shai, who's going to be talking about some of the gardening workshops and his love of gardening coming up a bit later on. But for now, here goes Jimi Hendrix, Valleys of Neptune. And we're back after that with the primary sector headlines. Jimi Hendrix there with Valleys of Neptune. Now it's primary sector headlines time here on the Over the Fence show, and a seven-year program aimed at lifting profits for deer farmers has been deemed a success despite not meeting all of its targets. The Passion to Profit program was launched in 2015 and was funded to the tune of $14 million, equally by the Ministry of Primary Industries and Dairy Industry New Zealand. Bruce Wills, the independent program chair, said China is now the industry's fourth biggest venison market, up from near zero exports at the start of the program. And at retail in the US, venison sales are growing faster than any other protein item, again up from near zero 7 years ago. And the overall value of dairy exports has increased by 17% in the year to July, with the total value of milk powder, butter and cheese exports rising $2.8 billion to $18.8 billion. Milk fats, including butter, rose 40%, milk powder rose 27%, whey and other products rose 23%, and milk and cream and cheese was up about 20%. Prime industry leaders will be amongst a trade delegation travelling to India to reignite business-to-business relationships. Representatives from Frontera, Zespri, Apples and Pears, and the Meat Industry Association will attend 3 days of meetings with various trade chambers, Indian government officials, and will attend the annual conference of the Federation of Indian Chambers of Commerce and Industry. So that's good. And Australia, of course, has just recently signed a free trade deal with India. So I guess New Zealand's a little late on that one. But hey, at least we're going over there now. And more than 350 rural health experts met in Christchurch earlier this week for the first national rural health conference hosted by Hauora Tai Whenua Rural Health Network. The conference will offer rural health practitioners the opportunity to have their say on what should be prioritised. Hauora Tai Whenua Chief Executive Dr. Grant Davidson said rural health workers were under immense pressure and the rural workforce is the number one issue. Without a workforce, we don't have a health system. He adds managing after hours in emergency care is the second priority because our people are working 24/7 with a reduced workforce that's becoming even more unsustainable. And yes, I will get someone on from Hauora Tai Whenua to have a chat about that conference over the next few weeks. And a new company called M2X Transport Management System is helping Silverfern Farms cut travel by 1 million kilometres annually, thereby reducing fuel emissions and improving animal welfare during livestock transport. Dan Bolton from Silverfern Farms said the tech digitised the company's transport bookings, optimising the efficiency of animal transport. He adds the animals were spending about 14% less time on trucks, and there was an emission saving of about 11% per animal being transported. Great initiative. Congratulations, whoever set that one up out there. And that's gone to your headlines. It's going to play for you now some old blues. Not super old, but old enough. It's Wang Dang Doodle by Howlin' Wolf.
Tell old automatic slim, tell old rave. Ball down at the Union Hall, all wrong and drunk till midnight, won't fuss and fight till daylight. We gon' pitch a wang wang doodle all night long, all night long, all night long. We gon' wang wang doodle all night long. Tell old Buddha a crawling red, tell Al a senior near, tell old Pistol Pete, tell everybody he needs. Tonight we need no rest, we're really gonna throw a mess.
and Bob's car Joe. We've got sawdust on the floor. Till Piggy and Caroline die, we gon' have a heck of a time. The fish said, feel the air. There'll be snuff juice everywhere. We gon' pitch a way, way to do all. Way, way, doodle all night long. Let me howl to you, baby. Way, 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 all night long.
Howling Wolf there was Wang Dang Doodle, and that was the London Sessions. And I was just looking at the thing, and also playing on that track was Eric Clapton, Steve Winwood, Bill Wyman and Charlie Watts. So, yes, a few names, a few listeners will probably remember. Weather time now here. High pressure in the Tassie starts to move in over the South Island today, whilst the cold front moves northward over the North Island. So that means showers for the upper South Island with snow flurries to 400 metres. Mostly clearing today, however. Showers also for the lower North Island, moving into Hawke's Bay this morning, then Gisborne this afternoon with southerlies. There's a bit of rain in Northland, which is going to ease the showers, and showers in the western regions clear later this arvo or evening. Perhaps there will be snow on higher parts of the desert and Napier Taupo Road. Anyways, here in the Waikato, partly cloudy with odd shower clearing. Beautiful day out there today. Little cool that wind, but yes, no, lovely, beautiful spring day out there in Whangaroa here today. Our daytime temperature is going to range from 14 to 17 degrees this week, and nighttime temperature somewhere between 5 and 9 degrees until Sunday, and then between 9 and 12 degrees into next week. Winds are west, south-westerly today, south-westerly tomorrow, Friday westerly, Saturday northerly, Sunday nor-nor-easterly on Monday, and nor-westerly Tuesday. And rain is pretty likely from Monday through to Wednesday. There might be some odd showers between here and there. Humidity today somewhere between 65 and 72%. The sun rose at 6:23 a.m. and will set at 6:09 p.m. The length of visible light is 12 hours 38 minutes. And the actual day length is 11 hours and 45 minutes. So yes, we're certainly coming up to the solstice all right. And tomorrow will be 2 minutes and 23 seconds longer than today. And the moon is a waning gibbous, somewhere between 82 and 86% illuminated, and will rise at 10:16 p.m. and set at 8:21 a.m. and in between clouds. I think it was last night, maybe the night before. Yeah, I saw the big, beautiful full moon that's just been. It was lovely. And that's kind of the weather. So now I'm going to play New Zealand band Abel Tasman's with their song Dialene, and we'll be back with some gardening to-dos after this one. That was the Abel Tasmans there with Dyleen. It's gardening time here on the Over the Fence Show. And if you're gardening by the moon, today through Saturday, prepare your kumara and sand and potting mix to produce the slips. Plant out the beetroot and Florence fennel seedlings. And from Sunday during the last quarter, it's a good time to prepare the beds for spring planting by adding compost, rock dust and lime if necessary. And September, first month of spring. Much to plant. And what, you ask? These things. At least some apples, apricots, asparagus, basil, beans, beetroot, blackberry, blueberries, bok choy, broccoli, cabbage, calendula, capsicum, carrots, cauliflower, celery, chrysanthemum, coriander, cosmos, courgettes, cucumbers, dahlia, daisy, dianthus, eggplant, feed jars, forget-me-not, fuchsia, gubera, gladiolus, and patiens, kale, lavender, leeks, lemons, lettuce, lily, limes, mandarins, marigold, mesclun, oranges, pansy, and viola, parsley, parsnip, bees, pears, petunia, phacelia, poppy, potatoes, pumpkin and squash, radish, raspberries, rhubarb, rocket rose, silver beet, snapdragon, spinach, spring onion, strawberry, sweet pea, sweet corn, and tomatoes. Plenty there to keep you busy. Now I'm going to play for you a cover of by NoFX of Frank Turner's song Bob. Hope you enjoy this one.
Spent 15 years getting loaded, 15 years until his liver exploded. Now what's Bob gonna do now that he can't drink? The doctor said, what you've been thinking about? Bob said, well, that's the point. I wanna think about nothing. I've got to do something else to pass the time. He had someone shave his head. He got a new identity. 62 whole air cushion boots and a girl who rides a scooter to take him out of town. They would get away, running around. As the trucks drive by, you could hear the motherfuckers play. An extra thermos of Joe. He'll be kicking in heads at the punk rock show. Cause Bob's the kind of guy who knows just what. Bob's the kind of guy who knows just what to do. When the doctor tells him to quit your drinking, now's the time. Will he ever walk the line? To all my friends I feel just fine. Will he ever walk the line? 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 Will he ever walk the line?
Bob, something's changed.
You get a haircut?
All right, folks, that was NoFX there. Doing a cover of Frank Turner's song, Bob. Hope you enjoyed that. And now it's time for some public service announcements here on the Over the Fence Show. And the Whangaroa Talent Factory entries close to that one on the 14th of October. which is coming up, was it October or September? September, sorry. So that's actually like in a couple of days on Friday, I think that is. So, yeah. Any rangatahi out there? I think it's 13 to 17 or 18 or something. If you're a DJ or a singer or a muso or an MC or whatever, sign up for that one before it's too late. Yeah, 13 to 18 is the ages for that one. And this Sunday, of course, is Meet the Candidates Day from 2 o'clock right here in the Town Hall. In the main Town Hall, not in Raglan Community Radio HQ, which is a little building, a little room out the front of the thing. So that's coming up. So it'll be good to see a lot of people there, and pretty much all the candidates from the mayor, from the two different councils, from the new Māori wards and the community board candidates are all going to be there. So it'll be a good one. That's from 2 o'clock this Sunday here in the Town Hall, so get along to that one. And voting day, of course, starts on the 16th, which, again, I think it's Friday maybe, right through the 8th of October, so your form should arrive in the mail or whenever that is. So, make sure you remember to vote, ladies and gentlemen out there. If you don't have your say, yeah, you can't really moan about anything. So, but yeah, come along to the candidates thing on Sunday anyway, and get an idea of what's up, anyways. And also, there's another Titiriti o Waitangi workshop coming up on October the 29th, from Saturday, which is 9 to 4:30. And I was there on Saturday, just gone, and so was our guest, who's just driving the studio, Shai.
Hello, Craig.
You were there at the treaty workshop as well. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, no, beautiful insight, beautiful presentation as well. Really, really informative. Made me really aware, a lot more aware of what I was. So that's I recommend as well joining in.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, it was a great day, and beautiful lunch too, and really informative, I found. Get along to that one. That's next one's October the 29th. And also from our friends over there at the Whangarau Environment Centre right next door here in the Town Hall, Spring Fling is coming up at the Community Gardens on the 25th of September from 2 to 4. That's like a working group thing. And check it out on Facebook. You can just turn up to that one. So, yes, Spring Fling, 25th of September, that's coming up. And as always, on Wednesday, the Tool Library is open next door there. At the Whangarau Environment Centre, cruising there, they got lots of stuff, spades, power tools, barbecue even, crock pots, lots of stuff like that. And also out the front here is the Aroha stand, which is seedlings, local seedlings grown. You can just walk in. They've got the punnets there. They have seed raising mix there, so you just wander in, and it's all local grown seed. Grab your seeds, go home, give them a water, and ella, there you are. And also the Raglan Growers Market's restarting on the 14th of October. So that's more information with that one as time goes by. And also, as always, you can get a hold of me here on Raglan Community Radio. What am I talking about? You can get a hold of me here on overthefenceradioshow@gmail.com. If you want to be any feedback about the show, good, bad, otherwise, let me know. All right. So that's all the public service announcements. Now I'm going to play a few Parky Courts, Black and White, and we'll be back very shortly with our guest today, Shai.
Sinful sort of side of being so contented. time for some Raglan news.
In local news, representatives of the Community Board have offered to set up a new Coastal Reserves Committee after the Mayor controversially ended the previous committee 3 years ago. The suggestion was made at a public meeting last night, attended by the fishing, surfing, football, mountain bike and horse clubs, along with surf schools and hapu and council representatives. There were plenty of questions and a look to the long-term future of Papahua, Manu Bay and especially Wainui Reserve, which is seen as having plenty of potential to meet community needs. In other council news, the plans to sort problems at Manu Bay are already running behind schedule, with the community board about to send a please explain letter to the council. And as a result of the horse riders group challenging the council's beach bylaw, there's currently no bylaw preventing horses and vehicles from driving on our beaches. This appears to mean police can't intervene until a situation escalates to a point where there is danger to the public, which is exactly what happened earlier this month when police were called out to an incident at Wainamu. Council is planning to install new signs asking people to be mindful of safety and the environment. There's also scoping works on the cars to rearrange Manu Bay so the parking doesn't block access to the waterfront, and also to widen the service lane at Whale Bay. And at local sport, the Raglan Roosters were stood up again on Sunday, with Gorkhali FC too lame to make the drive over the divvy. The result, while disappointing for the players, leaves them clear at the top of the Sunday League Division 1 table and looking like dead certs to win the competition this year. And that is the Raglan News for Wednesday, 14th of September 2022.
This is a community message for people isolating with COVID-19. If you need help, you can call the Community Response Group on 0800 Raglan between the hours of 10 till 2, Monday to Friday. Outside these hours, you can leave a message or email raglancovid@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can also dial the National COVID Helpline on 0800 512 337. Or if it's a medical emergency, dial 111.
Raglan Fuko exists thanks to the supportive community around us. Locals were our first customers.
To say thank you, we've created a $5,000 community fund for Whangaroa-based projects.
Maybe you need help kickstarting a community project.
Or extra funding to further the awesome mahi you're already doing.
Maybe you need money for trees.
Or hives for bees. Whatever it may be, we want to hear from you.
Head to raglanfuko.com and complete the online application form under our Good Project section.
Thanks for your support, Whangaroa.
Harbourview Hotel, the centre of Raglan, a bastion of good times. Great food, music, live bands, sports on the big screen, kitchens, gaming, accommodation and more. This week it's trivia night on Tuesday, $25 burger and beer special from 6 till 7. And Thursday night is jackpot draw of $500. And live on the big screen at 9 o'clock is Australia versus the All Blacks for the Bledisloe Low Cup. We look forward to welcoming you and yours for a great time in Raglan at the Harbourview Hotel.
Raglan Community Radio would like to thank Carver Designer Toys for their support.
Here you go!
Carver Designer Toys are unique, fun, wooden toys handcrafted for children to enjoy, non-toxic and eco-friendly, ranging from outdoor adventure playgrounds to kids' furniture to kit-set dinosaurs to trainer bikes. Carver Designer Toys will last years and years. Carver Designer Toys, now operating this side of the divvy on State Highway 23 by the Waingaro turnoff.
98.1 Raglan Community Radio.
Raglan Community Radio, all right, and also going to our friends over the divvy on Free FM 89.0 throughout the Waikato. And I've just been handed a thing here from the Old School Arts Centre, live and local. September, this Friday, Whitamu McCarthy, Brucey Jordan and Takiwa are all playing. Doors open 7 o'clock, Koha entry. And that's Friday, September 17th, 7:30. So there we are. Something else for you to think about for this Friday. But anyways, we are joined in the studio now by our guest for today, Shy.
Hey, Craig.
Kia ora, Shy. How are you going, man?
Yeah, good. Nice to be here.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
No worries, mate. And I understand it's your first time on the radio.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it is.
New experience for you?
Yeah. It's really special.
Cool. And I guess firstly, Shy, tell us a little bit about yourself. I guess firstly, I've never heard that name before. I met you the other day.
At the workshop,
At the workshop, yeah.
So I'm originally from Israel. I was born in Israel and arrived to New Zealand about 12 years ago. third of my life I grew up in Israel, actually, and another third I grew up in the UK. And part of that third as well, I've been traveling in my early 20s. And then the last third, I say, is been Aotearoa here. So it's been pretty special to have such a big chunk of time here. And one of the reasons I came to New Zealand is I've been traveling around the world, as I said, and I've been looking for a place to settle and to create some type of a life, I guess, that's sustainable and can be, you know, something that we can take with us to the future, something that can be healthy and productive. And I ended up in New Zealand because this felt like the most potential place to actually achieve this goal.
Do you remember when you first came across during your life, like, I don't know, sustainable sort of living and things like that? Do you have any memories of that, or has it always kind of been there for you? Do you know?
Yeah, well, I grew up on a farm. So we had beehives, we had chickens, you know, we had ducks and a couple of sheep, you know, just as pets as well. And I remember my father's grandpa, so my great-grandpa, he had gardens and beehives right in his backyard as well. So that was a big experience for me being a child, just seeing how everything kind of came to be in their household. Everything was just around them. And when I was 18... I actually bought some fresh strawberry seedling one day, and I decided to plant them down and see what happens. And I probably got a handful out of those few plants, and it was nice. It was really nice to have that experience of planting something, seeing it grow, having a feed, and going, I can do more of this. I can get more strawberries probably if I did more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of in a nutshell, you know what?
Okay.
And during my travels, I really got interested in, you know, kind of crossing different continents, different countries, different cultures. And I've seen how different people garden according to their culture, according to their climate. And I've just kind of picked a little bit of everybody's brains, let's say, and just accumulated enough knowledge to come up with my own way that I feel comfortable with and that I enjoy, you know. Gardening, so
that's really interesting. I mean, was it mostly similarities, would you say, between cultures and continents, or differences, or how would you kind of talk about that?
Well, for starters, everybody wants the same thing. Everybody wants to get a good crop. Everybody wants to have food on the table in the end of the day. So people do what they know, and what they're accustomed to. Unfortunately, I've seen a lot of new ways of gardening that are not really healthy for the soil health and not really practical long term, particularly the monoculture and kind of the heavy tilling kind of practices that we know and we see out there. And what I did like is to see kind of local farmers, you know, really small communities and local just kind of household gardeners, how much care and attention they give to their gardens and nourish the soil. And I saw the benefits, and I saw the continuity as well, and the closed cycle on their land, how they use materials that are really accessible and close close to them, so they don't need to go and get materials from far away. And it's just kind of a nice, sustainable closed loop that those gardeners been practicing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Irrigation-wise, I've noticed a lot of differences in different climates. There is trench methods, you know, there is like terraces methods, open drain method where you just fill up the whole trench with water and then you just close it up again and it just seeps through, or mulching with rocks in really hot climates. If you don't have a lot of carbon material, you know, we used to, back in Israel and in the south especially, we used to mulch our trees with stones, with rocks.
Yeah.
Just put them on top of the soil, like under the drip line or whatever.
Yeah. So they do get quite nice and warm, and it's not scorching the soil underneath. So you get the shade underneath. You lift up a rock, and it's nice and cool because it's been having the chance to cool overnight.
Yeah.
So it keeps cool underneath, and then almost like at nighttime, when you want to just warm up those roots a little bit, that stone actually radiates the warmth.
Yeah.
Down to the root system. So that's little things like this that cultures have, little practices that it's nice to observe. But you can't imitate everything and because it's not suitable necessarily to the current climate, to where we are. So, just nice to see.
Must be really interesting, though. So were you doing woofing or something in these places around? Or?
I didn't know that I was doing woofing, but I was. I was kind of exploring I was like journeying around the world, kind of finding who I am and in this world, I guess, in my early 20s, just exploring and meeting new cultures. I was really interested in the, particularly in the Aborigines of Australia and the Native Americans of North America.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I went to seek their wisdom, their culture, their stories. And I ended up seeing as well a lot of gardening methods. And then ended up staying and helping, camping in, someone's old, backyard, picking heritage tomatoes for a few weeks, or going to an organic peach orchard and, harvesting peaches for a month and just keep going. And you just hear the stories as you do, your daily mahi. And that's, I think, that's the way to learn. Just go and get involved with the people that live on the land and know the story. And there's something magical as well, kind of, just that camping as well, you get to be quite outdoors and, involved with the season. It's quite special.
Cool, man, yeah.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah, all right. And so whereabouts were you in the United States then?
Well, mainly Canada.
Ah, right up in Canada, okay.
Yeah. I've actually hitchhiked when I was 21 across from Montreal, all the way to Vancouver.
Right.
And I've done it really slow because I really enjoyed the journey. And I remember sometimes I would hitch a ride and we would just drive across and chat along, and then I would see this amazing river on the side and I'd go, stop, this is where I'm going to camp tonight. And I'd just, hop off the car and walk up the stream a few K and just set up a little bit of a camp, make a little bonfire and cook some dinner and wake up the next day and see a bear or an elk. Keep going, just with my own business. Business as usual out there, you just wake up and there's an elk staring at you. That's
cool. Cool adventures, man.
Pretty cool adventures.
Okay. And in Australia, where'd you sort of go around over there?
We've been at the start. My brother used to live in Melbourne.
Right.
So that's where I started. Kind of, I was in my 20s then. That was my first kind of overseas journey.
Mm.
I stayed in Melbourne for a few months, and then I moved to Perth.
Mm.
And that Western Australia was amazing. I really loved that kind of climate. It kind of was quite similar to Israel for me as well, dry and warm and desert, which I really loved that environment. And then I went to the east and Byron Bay and north all the way up to Cairns, and beautiful people all the way.
All right.
Yeah.
And did you stumble across permaculture over in Australia, or were you already aware of it then, or?
Well, nah, not really. It was, as I said, I was 20, and I wasn't really, I was looking for adventure more than necessarily finding any particular gardening method or following it, any type of, I don't have the word for it, but, wasn't really looking for anything. I was just trying to explore myself and the world. And so at that particular time, I haven't really found yet, let's say, permaculture at that stage. But, on arrival back to Israel, I have met some of my childhood friends that have slightly got quite interested in this topic and started to experience and go to workshops and good friend of mine actually moved and lived on a ecological permaculture farm and used to go to visit and just got quite excited by what I saw. And and I just started to do my own little gardens at the back of my parents' farm and just had my own little experiments. And in time, I just kept going and learned from quite experienced people. And just by experience of myself as well, I just kind of, just got more and more into it.
Yeah. And then Aotearoa, how'd that all come about?
So, it's a bit of a story there, but I'll make it short. I guess I was, going on a bit of an adventure in nature one day. I was 24, took some time off work, and then I just like to go sometimes out nature on my own and clear my head, and I just went and sat by a river for a couple of days. And I didn't even take a book. I just wanted to go on my own and just be present with the stream, and I just thought, let's see what happens, if I just sit there. And it was the first time that I really just gave myself that time to really just be still. And look within, I guess. And suddenly this message came on the second day. Go to New Zealand. Go to New Zealand. I was like, okay. Yep, you're going to go to New Zealand and you're going to find a place. There's going to be lots of trees and gardening tools and, all these amazing structures. And I didn't really know what this was all about, but I had to follow that calling.
Yeah.
I remember writing it down and wrote it down and just came home and started kind of rereading it every few days, that kind of insight that I got. And it became more and more real the more I gave it energy. And I thought, okay, well, I better go to New Zealand and find that place that I kind of saw.
Yeah.
Daydreamt.
And
And I came to New Zealand. I came to the South Island first, and I traveled for about a month down there and the Kahurangis. Golden Bay, met some amazing people.
Beautiful down there.
Oh yeah, still I've got a lot of beautiful friends down there, really, really special people. Close to my heart still down there. And then I travelled up north, roughly where you're from. I went to a place called Otamatea Eco Village.
Yes.
Kaiwaka. About a K or two out of Kaiwaka. And I was there for about 5-6 months. And there I learned a lot about permaculture, the really special people that I stayed with at the time, Robert and Marika. They were really, really practical, really, really special, and at the same time really artistic. So they showed me a way of gardening and working with a lot of joy. They really loved what they were doing, and they really got inspired a lot. They had horses as well, and I really loved that.
Did you happen to wander onto the Worsfold farm in Kaiwaka? The Worsfolds. That's where I first came across permaculture up there. They're in Kaiwaka at those ways. And Bill Morrison actually went to their farm years ago. My mate Heath, who's about my age, mid-40s kind of thing, when he was a kid, he remembers Bill Morrison being over there. And got a beautiful old permaculture orchard and set up, and it looks rad, and that's up Kaiwaka away. So, they would have known each other, no doubt.
The one farm that I have come across was the Kohanga Gardens.
Ah, yes.
Kay and Bob were part of that at the time.
Yeah.
And again, it was more an inspiration. I didn't really get to know them personally at the time necessarily, and it was close to the time that they actually moved down to Wairoa.
Yes,
east coast.
Yeah,
Kotare.
Yeah, they set up another village down there, didn't they?
Kotare.
Yeah. You been down and checked that one out, or?
I have.
Yeah,
I have. Yeah, went for a few days, quite a few years ago.
Yeah,
and they were just kind of setting up.
Okay. Yeah.
It's really inspiring, to see the effort that people go through. To set up something, but it's at the same time it's really rewarding to know, because I see land a bit like a baby. You give it everything you can, you give it all the nourishment it needs, and at some point it's walking on its own and it's free, and it's kind of independent, looking after itself, and then later on it starts to look after you, hopefully. It's
I've never heard land described like that before, but good one, man. I like it.
Yeah, it's alive and it's growing.
Yeah,
and it's giving back. Yeah,
all right.
It's beautiful.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I interrupted you, sorry, man. But anyways, you're up north in Kaiwaka there, and then...
Yeah, I was there for about 5-6 months. Yeah. And again, part of the story, you know, we only have a short amount of time, so but the place in the Coromandel called Wilderland, it's an organic farm that was established at on 1964. This name came up a few times during those 5-6 months of since my arrival to Aotearoa, and when the third time came along, there was this. She was a professor of anthropology from Michigan. She came along. She was doing some research for community living,
right,
in New Zealand. She wanted to bring her students from all the way from Michigan to here to have a bit of a study,
right,
on how communities, because she saw that community is quite quite an alive and happening thing in New Zealand at the time. This was, you know, 10 years ago.
So this, the Wilder one, is that in Port Charles?
No, that's just south of Fitianga and a little bit north, right, of Cora Glen.
Okay, yeah.
It's right on the harbour, right on the estuary.
Mm.
And yeah, it's an amazing 60-hectare piece of land. And yeah, when this professor came along, and we sat one day for lunch, and she told me about her story, and I said, oh, so which community do you think you're going to do your work about, you know, your study? And she said Wilderland. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's the third time I heard Wilderland since I'm here, and that must be a good sign to go and visit myself. I heard some good things about it.
Yeah.
So a week later I was there. Yeah, and I just met some really special people. And the place, as I was walking around, those kind of visuals that I had on that stream, on the bank of that stream back at home in Israel, you know, a couple of years prior to that, suddenly all clicked. And I said, oh, that's what I saw. This is the place I actually really just daydreamt and envisioned.
That's really cool, isn't it?
And it, something just dropped in my heart and was like, okay, like, this is it. I'm going to be here for a while. And I just felt welcomed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, from then on, I just felt like treating that place like my home. And I felt like giving it everything I have. And I actually ended up staying there for roughly on and off about 5 or 6 years.
Oh, right.
My son was born on that whenua.
Right.
Yeah, lived there with my family for quite a while and just learned those kind of larger practical skills, but doing them, kind of gardening skills, but doing them in bulk and doing them to a certain succession that lasts and is kind of continuous. So you can really rely on the food on a daily basis. So there weren't too many gaps in the end. We kind of nailed it down to we always have something to eat. And
that was just to feed you guys there? Or yeah, did you sell a bit off the place as well? Or?
So yeah, well, fresh produce-wise, let's say vegetables, was kind of enough to feed us. But there was, you know, between 20 to 40 people on average. Summertime we would go up to numbers of about 40 people a day having lunch together. And in the winters we would sometimes go quite low. Everybody goes, you know, lots of volunteers go home, and some of the locals try and take a break for themselves because things are quite slow, and it's a good time to take off for a bit. But yeah, you know, the storerooms were full. We had beehives, we had orchards, nut trees, apples, you know, like, yeah, apple orchard was massive. So we used to dry fruit and on sale, dried apples, dried persimmons. Anything we had in excess, we sold off. But yeah, usually the market garden side of things takes a lot of input and a lot of energy and a lot of kind of delicate attention.
Mm.
And we did see that feeding 40 people was enough for us to just work on those gardens for ourselves. So if we had a bumper crop, we would share that or preserve it and have some for winter.
Mm.
But yeah, one of my what was I going to say? Oh, I forgot. Anyway, lots of, you know, practical experience. Anyway, like lots of that.
Oh, how cool, man! Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I'm always fascinated by that kind of stuff. You know, you have like an epiphany or a vision or something or whatever, and then suddenly you find a place and it's like deja vu kind of. Actually, yeah, where have I seen this before or whatever? Mm. Yeah, I always find that stuff fascinating. Okay, so you're there like 5 years or something over the Coromandel, and then why did you leave?
So the one thing, you know, this place was one of the most sustainable pieces of land I've ever been on. Yeah. I felt like, you know, I remember there were days I would walk down with a rod down to the water, come back with a kahawai in my hand, go through the gardens, pick an onion, pick a couple of tomatoes, pick a cucumber, pepper, a few leaves of this and that, and walk home with dinner. You know, there's no shops. You don't need to go anywhere. It's right there.
Lovely.
And that's, again, another thing in my life that clicked and go, we can do this. We don't need to go shops every single, you know, like, if you have a small piece of land, okay, maybe you can't have all of that, but, you know, there's certain things that are very practical and possible to grow in your backyard, things that can, you know, really sustain you and a big chunk of your diet. So saw that, got really excited. And then, you know, the one thing that wasn't sustainable, unfortunately, was the people side of things. So this place, this land was gifted in the 90s, I believe, by the owner. Mm. He basically registered that land. He gifted it, and it became a educational charitable trust. Mm. And that was Dan Hansen's vision, basically, to keep this land as an educational organic farm.
Yeah.
So he knew, you know, that one day when he goes, this place is going to stay with this dream going on and supporting people, learning how to grow their food, learning how to live off the land, with the land.
Beautiful yeah. dream. Yeah.
And it's still going until today, and it had lots of hardships as well along the way. Actually, when we moved to Raglan 6 years ago, literally 2 months after we have arrived, there was a wildfire that have taken over and just got out of control up there. And a lot of us long-term kind of residents that were on that whenua for about 5-6 years have just left. We've all kind of held that place and looked after it and gave it everything we could, and we felt like it was time. The part of having the thing about having a charitable trust is that you don't necessarily own the land, and that's, you know, it's a beautiful approach to life. You know, we were all kaitiakis on the land, but at the same time we had families we had to look after, we had to feed and clothe, and health-wise, you know, if you want to go to the dentist, and there's all these little basic things, you know, you want to drive and visit your family, or you want to, you know, things that you want to do, even if it's just minimal.
Yeah.
But income-wise, it wasn't really sustaining us. And there wasn't that security of community. People were coming and going, and concepts were kind of shifting sometimes. And so it wasn't as stable. And we felt like we needed something a bit more stable. And we actually looked up north again. We looked at Just off Kaiwaka to the east, Mangawhai. We went out there. We had beautiful friends over there, and we went to visit and stay with them for about a week. Something didn't necessarily click at that time, so we moved down to Raglan for another couple of nights and stayed with our friends Yanis and Monica. It was really, really beautiful. Couple of days, everything just kind of clicked into place, and we met awesome people. Everybody was friendly and welcoming, and the next day we were here, there was already a house sitting gig for us to take on to, and we're just like, okay, we're coming, you know, this is the place has invited us, we feel welcome, so we just followed that.
All right.
Yeah, we just went with it.
Yeah,
it was time.
And that was, what'd you say, 6 years ago or something like that?
Yeah, 6 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, spring of it was August 2016.
All right.
That we moved.
Okay.
Moved over to Whangaroa.
All right.
Yeah.
And you've got a piece of land of your own now out Ruapuki. How'd that one come about? How long you been out there?
Oh, we've been just over 2 years now. Since we arrived, basically I was, I'll start with the, you know, start at the start, really. We came down and we started renting out some homes in town, and as it goes in Raglan, the renting market is quite difficult.
People, sure is.
You know, people asking you to move because they want to renovate, and suddenly they need to stay out because they want to move in themselves or whatnot. And we moved probably four or five times within, you know, 4 or 5 years, and we just had enough. At some point, actually, my brother, my father, and I came together in concept of, well, the market is going pretty crazy, and we felt like that dream, you know, like of having a piece of land, again, like an educational piece of land, kind of like the same concepts and principles of what I came from the Coromandel, the things that came with me, I wanted to share them. And I wanted to enjoy what I was sharing before, that way of living, being able to go to the garden, you know, pick your produce, have your things kind of right there, right around you, and be able to feed your family and your relatives and friends with that healthy and fresh, you know, and abundance. So. Yeah, so we put our forces together, family-wise, my father and I and my brother, and we just jumped on it. We went on what we could, and we couldn't afford anything around town with the money that we had at the time, and the market was just unreasonable, and it's even worse now. So that's why, hence, you know, kind of we just had to expand our horizon a little bit and go, and I'm actually really, really happy that we chose out there. So just that quiet, the presence of karioi is really, really, really potent. The sound of ruapuki waves breaking at night, yeah, it's quite magical. And I love it that if, you know, if somebody comes out, it means that they've put in the effort. You know, it's not actually that far, actually. You know, it's 15 to 20 minutes max, and you're there.
Yeah.
I think people don't realize that. It's how close it is.
Mm,
mm. But you go there and, yeah, and it's still that, it is quite, you know, it is developing slowly, but still there is that really outback, quiet and really friendly, neighborly relationships out there. And, yeah, I'm really happy we settled.
All right. On there. And so that was 1 or 2 years ago or something?
Yeah, a couple of years.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 So I guess you're just there at the beginning, I suppose, of... Planting things to eat.
Yeah, mm. Yeah, yeah. It's all at the baby stage. And actually, so until trees are mature and heavy cropping, I am kind of relying on a bit of produce off the gardens as a start, because gardens give you kind of a quick return, let's say, quite, you know, relatively fast. And so it's one thing that you can start achieving relatively quick. You see the results within a couple of months, if you know. 2-3 months, and you start having food on the table quite regularly. You know, if you're onto it, and it's
you bought in a big bunch of beautiful looking carrots too. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome. Yeah, no, it's as I said, it's a bumper crop at the moment, so it's nice to share.
Appreciate that.
You know, when there's more than enough, so welcome. So yeah, I think that in time, like, well, I'll probably start reducing, let's say, relying on gardening as much, but more relying on more like the big crops, like the trees, the avocados, the macadamias, the walnuts, persimmons, apricots. I've even got things like chirimoyas, lots of peaches and heaps of varieties of apples. I've planted about 100 fruit trees so far.
Good on you, man.
And
yeah.
Roughly 1,000 natives and firewood and kind of shelter belt trees that will be replaced by natives in time.
Yeah.
And I'm really trying not to be too invasive on the land in terms of machinery. You know, I don't really use excavations. I don't use a tractor for farming. You know, I don't use any of that kind of stuff. So it's really, really soft on the soil. Trying to, you know, have as less. Harsh impact, and then leave behind just nourished and know, hopefully,
yeah,
hopefully more better than I found it, let's say, you know.
that's the dream, that's mate. The that's goal. That's the kaitiaki thing, isn't it? You know,
yeah. Saying the word kaitiaki brings me to, like, yeah, I don't feel like I own that land, you know, and part of it is sharing it with the family, which is how I see it. I am a kaitiaki on the land, and I do look after it. And I know that nothing is forever, so I don't get too attached. All I can do is, yeah, like you're saying, be the kaitiaki and give it what I can when I can.
Oh, right. Yeah. And you've got a workshop coming up out there. Tell us about that.
So the workshop is going to be about the principles of basically gardening. It's like it's a method that's been out there for a little while now. It's called a no-dig or a no-till gardening. And basically it's just a method of not needing to disturb the soil and still having a really nice soil to work with. Just adding and nourishing the soil with good compost and homemade liquid fertilizers and, you know, basic local materials that are available to all of us, really. And we can all start a garden tomorrow if we wanted to. So that's if you want to start a garden and have a really, really in-depth and just right into it kind of practical knowledge, you're welcome to come in. Otherwise, just catch me somewhere on the street and ask me all about it, and I'll probably share with you everything I know anyway. So I'm not off selling my workshop because, you know, I would love people to come and learn and see it in action, because I learn by doing. So, you know, you can come and actually learn by actually doing it and having a, you know, some soil under your nails. And
For sure. Well, you might as well tell us when it is and where it is and that anyway.
First of October. It's a good date to remember, first of the month, and from 10 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon. And it's on our whenua out in Ruapuki. So it's 527 Ruapuki Road. And don't just rock up, because it's probably better to sign up. So you look at my there's a few posters that I've put around town on the odd notice boards, and then there's a friend of mine that also helps me a lot with advertising on the web, because I'm not really a part of any of those social medias just yet. I haven't got involved in any of those. So I've got a bit of exposure out there through good friends.
All right.
Yeah.
And so on the web, where do you find these things?
What do you mean?
How do you look up the workshop?
It's going to be like on the gardeners. There's all these platforms, I guess, up there. Yeah, there's the notice board, and you know, it'll just pop up at some spots. And,
all right.
Hopefully, people can do their thing and kind of promoting it as well, so people see it.
Do you want to give your email out?
Yeah, so it's edible, EDIBLE _ landscapes with an S at the end, and it's @hotmail.com.
@hotmail.
edible_landscapes@hotmail.com.
All right.
And if you're interested, if you're curious, if you have any questions or inquiries, just give us an email and I'll be happy to answer and see if I can help.
All right. So that's 1st of October, 10 till 4 out. Beautiful Ruapuki ways, and if you want to find out about that one, edible_landscapes at hotmail.com. And believe it or not, it's like 20 to 2. When you first came on, you said it was like I'll be able to talk for maybe 10 minutes, and then you know, that was like been a good 40 minutes solid, man. So thanks very much, Josh. Thanks very much for coming in. Craig, really appreciate it, man.
Thank you very much for the invite,
and good luck for the workshops. And
thank you.
Yeah, I'd love to get you back on again. We'll have more of a chat, because it's a great story, and I'd love to keep in touch with your progress on how it goes.
Come visit.
I will. Yes, I will get out there. Yeah. Thanks again, Shai. Appreciate it, man.
You're welcome.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, there we are. That was Shai there talking. Great story. I hope you enjoyed that. And here's a request of his. Actually, Wally, there, Shai. Here we are with No More Fighting by Althea and Donna. Tell us about how you came across this band and what do they mean to you? Don't know?
I actually don't even remember. I think I just really like reggae music. Quite often I listen to reggae music, and I just came across that band. As actually, there is a woman in Coromandel. She was a neighbor of the farm I was living in. She was a big reggae musician, and I remember her playing some tunes. Now it comes to me. She did play some tunes one in the Coraglen Market one time, and I probably asked her, you know, oh, who's this sweet band, you know? And she must have told me, oh, that's so and so, and so yeah, you know, it's one of those things you just hear.
Here it gets in there, All right, so here's Althea and Donna, No More Fighting.
Hope you enjoyed that. And that's kind of the end of the show, for, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back again next week. I think we've got local councillor Lisa Thompson on next week to have a chat about things and that. Have a lovely week. Enjoy the beautiful sunshine while it's here. There's going to be a little bit of rain, but hey, it's spring. And yeah, take care. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And me hidey a ho. I've got to go. Thank you for that one, Fire Lucy. All right. Thanks again to Shai. And yeah, take care, folks. Go get deck.